Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
We would like to thank Woodbine for their sponsorship of this program and some of the other programming and events here at Capital OTB. Woodbine's 2023 Thoroughbred Stakes program has more than $17 million in purses, including 39 graded stakes, 5 grade 1 events, and 2 $1 million classics, the King's Plate and the Woodbine Mile. Woodbine, now through December, great racing north of the border. Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. We are 1 week away from the Kentucky Derby, and we are kicking things off at Churchill tonight. We will have Thoroughbred racing available tonight, and that will include that opening night at Churchill. And as we are kicking things off at Churchill, I thought nobody better to reach out to than our friend Joe Kristofek, the paddock commentator at Churchill and more. Joe, good morning.
Good morning. How are we doing? I feel like I've already had a full day after the work show.
And we appreciate your jumping on and giving us some time, because I know this week is very, very busy. But I wanted you on board to kind of give a little preview of the meet, and we'll talk a little Derby and maybe get some ideas for tonight as well. But I wanted to start things out, just update people, because I pulled some pictures off the internet yesterday, and both of these look great, and they're two new additions. Talk a little bit first about the new paddock down at Churchill, and then first turn, the new grandstand there, because we have a shot of the grandstand and then a shot of looking out if you were sitting in the grandstand as well. But we started out, as I say, I pulled up a shot of a new paddock, which looks beautiful.
Yeah, and it's a temporary paddock. I mean, this is a temporary paddock for Derby week. We're going to be using another temporary paddock over by the chute area for the rest of the year, because the actual brand new paddock is going to be unveiled for Kentucky Derby 150. And that, you think this looks good? Wait till you see the new paddock we're going to unveil for the big anniversary Kentucky Derby next year. But this paddock is more than serviceable. It looks fantastic. It's amazing how, you know, the construction process goes when you think that things are impossible. They somehow sprout out of the ground. And, looking forward to that. And then the first turn, like you mentioned, that is functioning. That is fully serviceable. And from what I'm being told, and you saw the view and how spectacular it is, that's going to be a fun place to enjoy Kentucky Derby week and any other normal racing day at Churchill Downs moving forward. You know, there's talk of that being the sports betting area once we get that up and running as well. So that's going to be a great place to hang out with friends and family and enjoy not only Derby week, but, just a regular Wednesday or Thursday afternoon at the track.
Yeah, some nice improvements down there. I've been watching those with interest. And as you say, when there's a deadline, it's funny because it seems like it wasn't that long ago. Things were really, hammers and nails were still getting pounded in some of those spots. But as we get ready to open, things are looking very, very good and ready to roll, and certainly ready to roll for next week. Derby Day, and we'll talk a little bit about that in a second. But again, more preview of the meet. Just talk a little bit about the human side. I went on Equibase yesterday and was kind of looking the last few meets at Churchill, and no surprise, Tyler Gaffleone has been riding very well down at Churchill on the jockey side of things, on the trainer side of things. The last few meets, you've seen Steve Asmussen, you've seen Brad Cox in there, and Mike Maker, and a lot of the familiar names. Just give us some thoughts on the trainer and jockey side of things going into the spring meet.
Yeah, well, real quick on the jockey side, I mean, Tyler's been dominant at Churchill the last few years for the most part, and I think he won the spring title last year by 25 or 30 wins. It was a dominant spring for Tyler. But if you look back at the November meet, Louis Saez won the meet.
Yeah.
Tyler, I think, had 4 wins on closing day, but Louis Saez won the meet. And, you know, he's going to be here, Saez and Gaffleone. And then, you know, Derby week, we're going to have all the big names here. So, you know, the guys that you see on a regular basis at Churchill are still going to win a lot of races. Corey Lannery, Brian Hernandez, you know, obviously household names. Ray Gutierrez has taken his game to the next level after winning the Fairgrounds title. He seems to be getting into more and more prominent barns. So that's an overview of some of the top riders. And again, you know, a lot of these guys are going to head off to Belmont you know, once Derby week is over, and then we settle in with Saez, Gavilion, Brian Hernandez, Corey Lannery, you know, Ray Gutierrez, and a host of other very good riders.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that jockey colony at all. All right, let's talk a little bit about opening night and get some ideas on opening night, and then we'll get some Derby thoughts before we wrap up. And also want to hear about Brilliant Racing, too, before we wrap up. But first, let's take a look tonight's sixth race. Yeah, it's $127,000 for non-winners at two lifetime, mile and a 16th on the grass. It looks like a fun little field in here. What did you see in the sixth?
Well, again, I think the topic here is the grass, right? We have had documented issues with the new turf course last year. And, you know, from everything I'm hearing, you know, with the horses working on it several times, the way it looks, I mean, we should be golden for this entire year. And I hope that's the case, because we definitely like regular grass racing mixed in with the Great Dirt program. This particular race looks really chalky to me, Seth. I think Chasing the Crown for Mike Maker off the second last stop, the strong quality who came back and won again at Keeneland, going to be super tough to beat. And then Maasai Warrior, who took 11 tries to break his maiden, but he seems to be a much better horse now that he's moved over to the turf than he was originally on the main track. So to me, it's a two-horse race. This is the start of the late pick five with the low 15% takeout, and I'm not going any more than two deep in here.
Yeah, and I will say, I meant to pull up the video, because I saw some video, I think it was on Twitter. I meant to pull it up, and then I'm looking at my rundown, I forgot to do it, but I saw a shot of some horses working on the turf course. It looks gorgeous. So, knock wood, good things on the turf course this season for Churchill. Seventh race at Churchill this afternoon, a mile and a quarter for maiden specials. Kind of an interesting little twist there. What did you see in race number seven?
Well, again, and it's interesting. We got some twists Derby week, and we're using the Kentucky Derby starting gate. So this is the 20-horse gate. They want to test that out a couple times, Seth, today. And then we got a race similar to this one for the boys on Tuesday. This race, I like Corsini. Certainly bred to run all day. Hard spun out of a dam side of the family that has a lot of stamina. Fifth on debut, that was in a sprint. Fourth last time out behind New Beat. And broke slowly, was wide on the first turn, rallied through traffic, and galloped out like a horse that's going to relish the added distance. Corsini, one of my best bets of the night.
All right, and yeah, that makes sense. Get a little practice at the mile and a quarter, and pull the big gate on, so I can see that. All right, we're back.
Yeah, make sure it works, and make sure all the gate guys are used to it, because we've got an important 20-horse race to worry about next Saturday.
You know, we were talking earlier on the handicapping show about the one hole, and you used to have to take the right turn out of the one hole the Kentucky, but the new gate mitigated that, right?
I mean, for the most part, you still don't want to be down there.
Yeah,
I remember
Mo Donegal
through the rail last year, and I didn't really think it was detrimental to him. You know, you're four solid pats out further than you were before, and the positioning's a little bit different too. So, yeah, it makes a big difference in that respect.
Yeah, I said exactly the same thing. I said you don't have to make that turn coming out of the one hole, but I don't know if you still want to be there with 19 horses who are thinking, hey, we want the rail. But eighth race this evening, 5.5 furlongs on the grass for optional claimers, non-winners of two other than types. What did you see in the eighth?
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to be leery of a quick money for Chris Hartman, first try in his barn after, you know, running some big races on both turf and dirt, but having kind of body form. Chris has a way to kind of sort of turn horses like this around and maximize their abilities. 8-1 with Ray Gutierrez. And I don't remember ever seeing Ray Gutierrez for Chris Hartman. So that's a new one on me. And then the horse to beat from the rail, Nota Bene, who got beat ahead last out to Her World. That was a fast but controlled pace up front. And this horse closed well from off the pace to just miss. Third start of the form cycle should run just as well.
And you mentioned Ray Lou, and I haven't talked to you since the end of the fairgrounds meet, but that was a heck of a performance by Ray Lou. And, of course, we root for him up here because he's an upstate New York guy. He started, you know, the Rochester area and Finger Lakes, and then he spent a summer at Saratoga. Great guy, and it was fun to see him win the fairgrounds meet.
Yeah, James Graham has been winning the titles at fairgrounds, but, you know, it's always that battle Kobe Hernandez is involved in it, and Jared Loveberry had a great meet this year, missed a couple of weeks later in the season, which may have cost him a legitimate chance to make a run at Reilly for the title. Adam Esquitz has done well at Fairgrounds in the past. It's always a close race, but Ray and Jose Santos were intent on winning the title this year. They didn't leave town as often as they had, or as often as they did, I should say, last year, and it made the difference. And you know, you got a good agent, you're a good rider, and he's riding for a lot of different barns now, and I got a feeling he's going to have a good season in Kentucky this year.
Yeah, it'd be very interesting to follow him, Churchill. All right, finally, we'll get a thought on the stake tonight. I don't know if you can get past the favorite, the Roxalana, $175,000, three-quarters of a mile for the Phillies and Mayors. And the favorite is Frank's Roquette for Bill Mott, coming off a nice win in the Hurricane Birdie down at Gulfstream. Your thoughts on the Roxalana?
Yeah, many six-year-old mares in training, right? But she appears to be as good as she's ever been. I mean, I know she's got 11 wins on the resume, but she was one of those horses that you could go against as a favorite in a lot of her races. I don't know if she likes Gulfstream that much better than she likes it everywhere else, but you look around at the alternatives in this race, and you know, she beat Capellia by 12 lengths last time. Capellia does like Churchill Downs. She won the Dream Supreme Stakes here in November, but is the difference in post position and the difference in venues really going to make a 12-leg difference? I doubt it, but that would be my alternative, Capellia. But Frank's Roquette looks super tough.
Very good. So there's some thoughts on the action tonight, opening night at Churchill. But, again, the big day. Well, give us a little – you mentioned Tuesday racing. Give us a little feel for what's coming up this week down at Churchill, because I know Derby week, I mean, Oaks Day was – has traditionally for a long time been a big day as well. But the whole week has now been kind of themed and become important, and there's a day for the locals and whatnot. Just lay out what's coming up this week down there.
Not much sleep for me. That's what I'll lay out first of all. Derby work shows continue through Thursday. So, you know, we're doing those every morning at 7 to 8 o'clock. You can find them on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, Derby website, etc. As far as the racing goes, we're dark Sunday and Monday. We have the draw for the Derby and the Oaks on Monday. 2 o'clock Eastern time, we'll draw the Oaks first, and then the Kentucky Derby. We should be done with both of those within an hour. And, you know, then Tuesday, they've rebranded that. It's called 5-0 Tuesday. Area code here in Kentucky is 502.
Clever.
So they creatively named it 5-0 Tuesday. You've got Champions Day on Wednesday. You've got Derby on Thursday. Then you've got the Oaks and Derby Friday and Saturday. Stakes races, you know, good maiden races, good allowance races. I mean, today's card, you know, on the front end of it's got some claiming events, but, you know, it's kind of like, you know, that opening night where it's downs after dark, and, you know, you've got that more casual crowd, and, you know, want to make sure we just get things off and running smoothly. Really like that we open at night 1 week before the Kentucky Derby, and then the buildup continues like you mentioned.
Totally agree. All right, let's get some Derby thoughts. And to start that out, again, you were down at the Fairgrounds as you normally are during their season. So I pulled up a replay of the stretch run of the Louisiana Derby. Kings Barnes gets it done for Todd Fletcher. Running second was Disarm. Running third, Jace's Road. They will all be in the big race a week from today. I'm wondering what you thought of the horses coming out, what you think of the horses coming out of here. And I will mention Disarm, who, again, the number five horse, as we watch the replay here, running second. Seems like he had a little buzz earlier this week with his workout for Asmussen after he just snuck in with that placing in the Lexington. Give us some of your Derby thoughts, and in particular, horses coming out of the Louisiana race.
Yeah, I mean, I picked Disarm to win the Louisiana Derby, and he ran a good second, and Kings Barnes had a soft pace up front. But at the same time, you know, Kings Barnes was drawn away from everybody at the end, and that was a mile and 3/16 with a long stretch in the Louisiana Derby, which most replicates the Kentucky Derby as far as the distance and the challenge goes. I think Kings Barnes has got a huge shot. I would not be surprised to see Disarm run really well. And then of the other horses coming out of our Louisiana preps, what about the Risen Star winner, Angel of Empire, who came back to win the Arkansas Derby in even more impressive fashion than he did when he won the Risen Star in a race that kind of fell apart, made a scintillating move on the turn in the Arkansas Derby, showed better tactical speed, and he won that race very impressively too. So I think the Louisiana preps were very good this year and I'm gravitating towards a lot of those horses. You know, King's Barnes, and then Pletcher's got the Tapa Trice. He costs $1.3 million, and he looks every bit the part of that big-ticket item price tag because he's looked phenomenal in the mornings. And then Forte just keeps going about his business like the true professional he is. He's never lost a two-turn race. So, you know, 6 weeks before the Derby, 2 months before the Derby, we're like, man, who's going to step up to the plate? And a lot of these horses are, and they haven't disappointed in the mornings. And I think there's going to be a lot of different ways you can go. And as it is every year, super exciting to lead up to the Derby. But I think this field is stellar, and you're going to get the right price no matter who you like.
You know, you said you've been doing the work show, and I'm just wondering, anybody notable buzz one way or the other, good, really good or hasn't looked good in the mornings?
Well, I mean, I think the horse that is the enigma is this Dermasota Gaki,
yes.
And I kind of liked him off the UAE Derby, but he did, I mean, he popped out of the gate today, and, you know, they pulled him up, you know, before the finish line, and the horse was not happy, throwing his head around. Some people were really impressed by that work the other day with Continue R. He left him in the dust, but, man, he was all out, and I didn't think the gallop out was that great. I mean, I've kind of gotten off of this horse while some other people have gotten on him based on the way he's training in recent weeks. So I think he's the horse that you either like or you don't, and some people are talking about him being maybe the third choice in the Derby. And, you know, if that's the case based on what I've seen in the mornings, I want to see more professionalism. I don't want a horse with, you know, kind of funky action, throwing their head around with this unconventional training style coming into the race. So that's the one. And, you know, Tapa Trice's look great. I mentioned Forte's look great. Angel of Empire's gallop out today in the morning work was sensational. Mage's looked really good, too. I mean, most of these horses are coming into the race the exact way you'd want to see them coming into it. Nothing really overly negative. Except Dermasota Gaki, who some people, like I said, they love what he's doing out there.
That is very interesting because I found him interesting. Your comments are now intriguing to me. And it's great. That's what you want, everybody coming in good form for the most part. Joe, before we let you go, we always like to get an update on the racing partnership because I know we have some folks up here who have been involved with some of the brilliant racing horses. Always like to root for locals, and I was reading the Brilliant Racing Twitter feed last night. 5 years, hard to believe, but give us a little update on Brilliant Racing.
So we closed partnerships 1, 2, and 3. You know, we sold horses that got claimed away from us, et cetera, et cetera. Partnerships 4 and 5 are going. Remastered's the only horse we have in training right now that is running. He's a Churchill at Michelle Lovell, ran a good fourth on debut. Don't Let Go got injured in a fourth place effort at Fairgrounds. He's on the mend. He's got a lot of promise. Don't Let Go does. And then Brilliant Racing 5, we just bought a Spitzer filly at OBS. We've got 3 other 2-year-olds that we bought as yearlings that are all progressing very well, in, including a horse by the name of Dual Guru, a Louisiana bred that we named in honor of John G. Dooley, the track announcer at Fairgrounds. And we just bought another one for Brilliant Four, a Mendelsohn filly too. So we haven't been seen, those silks haven't been seen very much in recent months, Seth, but we've got a big wave of horses coming probably towards the summer, the end of this year, where we're going to be entering races on a regular basis.
Looking forward to it. During the afternoon handicapping show, if I see your horses, I always give it a little thumbs up, and we're rooting for you, so looking forward to those horses coming. And for folks who may be interested in getting involved in the game, you got a great website, Brilliant Racing. If you type that into Google, you can find the website and learn more. Joe, appreciate it as always. Try to get as much sleep as you can, and we'll be tuned in over the next week and enjoying it, and you have fun as well.
Believe me, I try as hard as I can, Seth. The schedule doesn't dictate as much, but this is what it's all about. This is what we live for in this game. So thanks a lot. Good luck, man.
Appreciate it. Joe Kristofek, again, paddock commentator and more down there at Churchill Downs. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, More Derby talk. We'll be joined by Jeremy Plante, Countdown to the Crown. We'll get some of his Derby thoughts right after this. Stay tuned.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
It's that time of year.
Forte wins!
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear.
Practical Move has won the Run Happy Santa Anita Derby.
Join us on Wednesday, May 3rd at 7 p.m. for the annual Capital OTB Kentucky Derby Seminar. Streaming live on the Capital OTB YouTube channel and other social platforms. Join Seth Merrill, Anthony Mormito, and the Brooklyn Cowboy Kevin Cox for a comprehensive look at this year's Kentucky Derby.
Stone is an outside threat. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Birdstone. Birdstone surges past. Birdstone wins the Belmont Stakes.
In front, but here comes High Chaparral. High Chaparral, the defending champ, to take it to Papa. These two are travels head to head with Joe Hart bearing down on them. It's going to be a three-horse photo finish in the turn. Here's the wire. Photo finish.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, joined now by our friend Jeremy Plonk. You can find his work, his Countdown to the Crown package every Friday, Countdown to the Crown, horseplayernow.com. And the Countdown to the Crown package today is a lot of fun. The annual historical comparisons, where each horse is compared to somebody historically who has had a very similar pattern, which I think is a great and a fun way to look at the field. Throughout the Triple Crown season, or throughout the lead up, the Derby prep season, Jeremy has come out every Friday with reviews and previews of the big stakes races along the Derby trail. So who better to talk to a week out than Jeremy Plonk? Jeremy, good morning.
Hey, good morning. It's good to be with you. And yeah, it's a fun trip down memory lane. I've been doing Countdown for 18 years now, and I think this is about the 12th or 13th year we've done the historical comparables, because it's a repeat pattern, right? We kind of have the same preps every year. Things change as time goes on, but a lot of stuff stays the same. And horses who have, you know, similar resumes just kind of keep popping up. And it's not even just like, oh, okay, this horse ran in the Louisiana Derby, howdy do. There are horses that go back to, like, their actual debut, you know? They won their second start at Saratoga. They went to Churchill in the fall. Then they went to Gulfstream. Then they left Gulfstream and went to Oaklawn, you know? Like, the path for Rocket Can is almost identical to Super Saver back in 2010, you know? And it's kind of interesting, you know, how these things play out. And they lost the same races after winning the same kind of races and things like that. So it gives you a little sense of how they may, you know, how they may react in the Triple Crown Series. Like, look, we're trying to predict the future, which is never easy, but the one thing we can do is recap the past with accuracy, right? So we know what they've done in the past, and that can be factual. How it projects forward, that's what we have to interpret.
And as I say, I appreciate the comparisons, because I think the Derby is such a unique animal that I think you can rely to some aspect, to some level, on these kind of comparisons, because the Derby sits there the first Saturday in May. We have the same, you know, prep races coming into it. So it's very similar year to year to year. And because of that, I think it makes the comparisons more potent.
I do too. And I think the one thing that makes the Derby the most unique race in all of American racing isn't the distance, isn't the pomp and circumstance. It's that it is for three-year-olds on the first Saturday in May. There is, barring a pandemic, I guess we have to say that now, but there is no wiggle room, right? It is going to be one day in your entire life that you are 3 years old on the first Saturday in May to run the Kentucky Derby. So There's no mercy. If you had a bad race prior, there's no time to rebound. If you missed a couple workouts, there's no time to rebound. It is fixed, right? It is a fixed date and time, and there's only one day to get it. So like a horse like Flightline, great. He won the Breeders' Cup Classic as a four-year-old, but it took him like his whole career to get to that one spot as a four-year-old. Had he missed it, he could have came back next year at five and tried it again, right? Or if it wasn't the Breeders' Cup Classic, he could have waited for the Pegasus World Cup and run in January. There's only one Derby. There's only one date and time. And you only get 1 year in your life to run in it. I think that's what makes it so fascinating and interesting. And it doesn't move tracks like a Breeders' Cup, right? Like, okay, maybe I'm not great at Del Mar, but next year Breeders' Cup's at Keeneland, I'll have a better chance. You better like Churchill Downs in May. Yeah. This is all you get, you know? It's like one shot. So I think that's why some of these fixed factors do create repeat situations. And that's where we see the fun with it. Now, can we come up with 23, 24 great comparables every year that are going to be telling? Of course not. But I think a handful of them can be. The rest of it makes for a good trip down memory lane. And also what kind of works and doesn't work, you know? I think it gives you a little bit of sense of that.
The one thing that did change this year, and you wrote about it in last week's Countdown to the Crown, and I'm looking at your three things you won't read anywhere else where you talk about crediting the fifth-place finisher with Derby points, had some folks on the outside looking in. And I'm guessing you agree with me. The one that I'm most disappointed about, and you in this week, Countdown to the Crown, you talk about watching this one maybe for the Preakness, Mandarin Hero with a really good second-place finish in the Santa Anita Derby at 40 points, just is kind of sitting a couple of spots out, and that's a little bit disappointing because I thought that horse could be very, very interesting.
Yeah, look, a second-place finish in one of the big preps used to be worth 50 points.
Yeah.
This year, and the top four horses got points. This year, they took it down to the top five, and basically, they moved the points from the second-place finisher. The winner's still worth 100 points. Well, 100's like, why bother, right? I mean, once you get above 50, you're in the field anyway. So the winner could be worth 90 points, and they could have left the second-place finisher at 50. Because that, I think a second-place finish in the Santa Anita Derby is worth more than winning the San Felipe. You know, and the San Felipe's worth 50, or the Rebels worth 50, or, you know, the mid-level March races are worth 50 points. And those are worth more than winning or running second in the at the end of the season in the big preps. So I think that's probably where they made their mistake, where you've got some horses. It's a higher point total than usual to get in the Derby. It's never been where 40, 45 points were needed to get in the Derby. 30, 35 were more than enough. So what changed? The point system changed. It's not like the amount of horses qualifying, things like that. There was no big difference in that regard. You know, with a Japanese horse like that, too, is if you want to encourage somebody to come over for a prep race like that, then they only have one shot, and they got to win it. You know, it's like almost like a win, and well, not almost, it is a win, and you're in for a horse like Mandarin Hero coming over. And he darn near did, right? And he only missed by a nose, but they're also like, what, 30, 40 points races throughout the course of the year. And if you really wanted to get in the Derby, don't wait till the last second and run just one time. You know, there is some element of that, too. So it's not like it's unfair, you know. Like, they knew the schedule. If they wanted to come over twice, they could have ran San Felipe and Santa Anita Derby if they really wanted to make sure that they wanted to get in. So I don't have any, like, hard feelings for them not getting in. But it just seems to be, like, the adding fifth-place horses in for points makes no sense. Who wants the fifth-place finisher in any race, you know? I'd rather have the runner-up, and so you got to make the runner-up worth more points.
Yeah. No, it's interesting this year, no question about it, with the switch-up. And you make a great point. The 100 is kind of a given, so you could make that 90, you could make that 80, and they're still good to go. And the second-place finisher could get a little bit more. Yeah, interesting to see if they do, because I think there is a little buzz, and interesting to see if they tweak that going forward. All right, let's talk some specifics now. I pulled up some replays, and we'll get some of your thoughts on some of these runners. Let's go back. We were down there. We covered the Florida Derby back on April 1st, and it was a nice performance. I think we're going to pick this up on the far turn. Forte is going to be the number 11. And watching the race live, I thought when Mage went by, I thought Forte was done. And then he gets going again and grinds it out. Now, the knock after, visually it was impressive. Todd Pletcher, I saw him in the winner's circle right after the race, and he said, I think it sets us up nicely for the Derby. So he was happy. And we're seeing here. Forte pulls out, and you think he's kind of done, and then you can see, nah, maybe he's not done. So, again, Pletcher was happy with the performance, but the timing was off, the original timing. They retimed it, and they took some buyer points away from him. So I think some point, some folks, if they're taking a negative look or a skeptical look at Forte, have some things they can hang their hat on from that aspect. But again, as we watch the Florida Derby here, boy, that was some performance. Your thoughts on Forte going into the Kentucky Derby?
Yeah, look, everybody's got to, you know, try to find some flaws with a horse who's won 6 out of 7. He's won 4 Grade 1 races now. First horse since Nyquist to go into the Derby with 4 Grade 1 wins. And we know what Nyquist did, came out of the same Florida Derby, and this is part of my historical comparables, is this horse looks like Nyquist on paper. Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner, went to Florida, won the Florida Derby. You know, both those horses were, sired similarly by horses Uncle Mo and Violence that were really hot-shot two-year-olds into the early three-year-old season for Pletcher. They didn't make the Derby. He looks a lot like Nyquist, and, you know, I don't know if anybody looked at Nyquist back that year and said, wow, he's the next, you know, great superstar. But he was an undefeated Kentucky Derby winner, and he was kind of a little underappreciated. After he lost the Preakness, everybody just kind of, you know, okay, well, that was good. He's kind of run through his cycle. And I think that's what the deal with Forte is. He's a lot like Nyquist. I don't think he has the appreciation that he should for his record and his resume, maybe because it's the speed figures, I guess. I mean, they did give him 100 in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Where's he going to go off of that? I mean, if he had 100 in the Juvenile, did you expect him to come out and run like 102 and 103 his first, you know, the next two starts here towards the Kentucky Derby when he was 50 cents and 30 cents on the dollar? They didn't run the Kentucky Derby in February or March, so I don't know why they would have went out and tried to win the Florida Derby in 147, you know. It was still 149-1, which when you look in this crop, that's not that bad for that's pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
Santa Anita Derby was barely faster on a track that was really fast that day. I mean, I was talking with Jeff Siegel about it. The Santa Anita Derby, that day, the track was really fast out there in California. Arkansas Derby's running 49-3. Woods won in 151. Bluegrass is running 150. And we're splitting hairs on a horse that 149-1, it was actually, you know, changed the time to make it 149-1. And I'm sure it's more accurate now than it was on Florida Derby Day, but that doesn't make it worse, you know, compared to the rest of the crop, because they're not running against the clock. They're running against the other horses in this crop. So if you're like, oh, well, 149 is pretty good against this group. So I don't understand everybody lining up to take a shot against Forte. And I'll just tell you now, he's going to be my pick. We put out the first Kentucky Derby wager guide, and I'm on the record as having Forte as my pick. This reminds me a lot of Orbs, Seth, and you know I'm big on this history stuff, right? It keeps coming back to it, but nobody wanted to give Orb any credit back in 2013. He ended up 5.5-1 as the favorite because everybody was trying to find something else, and they didn't look the gift horse in the mouth, literally, you know? I mean, 5.5-1 on the Derby favorite. I think Forte's going to go up. Everybody's trying to find a reason to beat him. It'll be interesting to see, you know, what Jim McInvale's money does to a horse, you know, that's 5-1 on the tote board. Maybe it drops him to 4. But I think Forte's going to be an overlay in the win pool. He's still by far the best horse in this crop. And I know you're going to say a buyer figure or whatever like that, but he's won the Juvenile, the Fountain of Youth, and the Florida Derby. The Florida Derby's been the most important preparation in the history of the Kentucky Derby. More Florida Derby alumni have won the Kentucky Derby than anywhere else. Why wouldn't he be appreciated more? I mean, I guess, look, the margin of victory, whatever, but it's kind of like Zenyatta, right? Nobody gave her that much credit. It was Californians, you know? Oh, she's not beating anybody, and she's just barely getting there, and she doesn't run huge speed figures, but damned if she didn't win 19 in a row until the Classic, you know? I mean, I'm not saying Forte's going to win the next 19, but I think he's a lot like Nyquist in this respect. If he gets the Derby, I think he will be vulnerable in the Preakness. You know, I think that's where you kind of maybe get to the end of the rope, because the Derby takes a lot out of a horse, and he's already done so much with 4 Grade 1 wins. I think if you're going to beat him, it's at Pimlico, but I think he's still the horse to beat.
Yeah, as we were walking out Gulfstream Park, Florida Derby night, there was just a anonymous patron next to us, oh, he's done, he's toast, he had to work too hard. And I totally disagree with that. I think it was a nice gutsy performance that sets him up. Whether he wins or not, I think he's going to run very well. What are your thoughts on Maige Baj, who ran second? And at looking at your Derby comparisons, I'm guessing you're in the camp that I am. I know it's the 21st century, but, man, he's very lightly raced.
Yeah, there's like, I've been talking to a lot of people that are just like all over these horses that didn't come out until like January and February of this year. King's Barnes made it. Like, have you forgotten? Like, you know, it took a century for Justified to do this, you know? And we know with Justified, look, he didn't pass the test in the Santa Anita Derby. You know, he tested positive there, and they litigated it out of court to keep the victory there. And everything that's gone on with Baffert. So if you can even tell me Justified was an honest racehorse, if you can tell me that, which the facts tell me that maybe he wasn't, even if he's an honest racehorse, do you think another one like that's coming along?
Yeah.
Like, right, you know, like on the heels of that? It's a lot, you know. But the one thing, like, the difference between, like, Justify and some of these other horses, Justify was the favorite, right? And could you possibly take a favorite in good faith knowing that? No. And he wins, you tip your cap, you maybe are skeptical, but whatever. If, at least with like Maige or King's Barnes, I think you're going to get a big price in the Derby. And so at a big price, do you want to take a chance? I don't have as much of argument with that. If King's Barnes is kind of like a hot deal and gets bet to like 8 or 10 to 1, no way in the world. But there's no way Maige is going to be 8 or 10 to 1. I think you're going to get 20, 30 to 1 on Maige no matter what. So if you want to take a shot on a horse that lightly raced, then get the price for it, you know. And at 30 to 1, I think you're okay to gamble on him. At anything under that, I think it's a real risk. I know Eddie Olczyk, he and I spent some time a couple nights ago recording a bunch of preview videos. And Eddie's very high on Maige, and I respect him as a handicapper. And so, you know, it makes me, like, when a good handicapper that I respect has an opinion different than mine, it makes me go back and look again, right? It shouldn't necessarily change your mind. You don't blindly go with somebody else. But if you respect that person, you should respect it enough to go back and look at the horse again. So I'm going to keep evaluating Maige, watch how he trains once he gets I think he has arrived now at Churchill. Don't quote me on that, but I know his final work was down at Gulfstream. But, you know, I want to see him over the track a little bit. Maybe I like the horse a lot. I know this. I picked him to win the Fountain of Youth. I thought he would beat Forte first time out, you know. I thought his debut win was really impressive. So I like Maige a lot as a horse, but I don't know if I like him as a Kentucky Derby winner. You know, I would have liked him probably better in the Pat Day Mile and then maybe on the Preakness. That he would be better as a Preakness horse with another race under his belt. But then you're going from two turns to one turn, back to two turns. So that's not a great path either. So he is where he is because he got such a late start. You don't debut to January 28th. Like I said, that sucker is fixed on the first Saturday in May, right? They're not moving it for you. So he had to get here the way that he did. The one thing about Maige, I think, is going to happen in the Kentucky Derby is this is a fast horse, Seth. You know that. You saw that debut win when he won 6.5 and 122, or 7 furlongs and 122, right up on the lead the whole way and drew off. I think they did not want to burn this horse up in the Florida Derby or in the race before the Fountain of Youth because he was coming along so late in the game. I think they took it a little easy on him and tried to make him an off-the-pace type and not burn him up, right? Just don't go barreling out there sprinting and run this horse into the ground against this tough competition. I kind of think they took the conservative approach stylistically in those two races because it's much easier to run your first half in 48 and try to finish up than go out there barreling in like 46 and try to wire the field. They could have burnt the horse up and not had anything left if they'd done that. This horse is way faster. There's no way in the world he was 12th in the Florida Derby in terms of speed. But he went to the back, he came and made his run, and he made that great run on the turn. I think Maige is going to be part of the Derby pace. I think when it comes to Kentucky Derby time, they got the qualifying, they got to the race where they want. This horse is naturally faster than most horses in this crop. There's a lot of plotters and closers in this group. I think Maige is going to go towards the lead. I wouldn't be shocked if he makes the lead, but I think he'll be 1-2-3 going down the backstretch.
Yeah, I'm an old fart, I guess. I've been playing so long, but again, just so lightly raced, I cannot pull the trigger there. And as you say, maybe it would have been better kind of working a little, you know, picking some spots and then maybe go to the Preakness or play in the big races a little bit later on. But I get it. The siren call of the Kentucky Derby, and if you think you have a horse and you got the points, I get it. But as I say, just a little too lightly raced for me. But I do want some thoughts on a horse. I grabbed a little of Angel of Empire in one of the future pools at 38-1, so I'm looking forward. I liked him in the Risen Star. I liked him in the Arkansas Derby. We will take a look at the Arkansas Derby stretch run. Number six, Angel of Empire, gets it done for Brad Cox, and I think comes into the Derby in a good situation. Obviously, I'm a little bit biased with the future ticket, but give me your thoughts on Angel of Empire.
I loved his race in the Arkansas Derby. I think it was probably the best performance by any horse in a prep race in America. I thought the Japanese horse over in Dubai arguably had the best prep of anybody. But the final three furlongs of the Arkansas Derby were absolutely fabulous. 37 and change. If you go back and look at the Arkansas Derby, typically the last three furlongs of that race is 39 and change. I mean, he went fast coming home. That, to me, is a really strong sign. However, if you would have run this race a week or two ago, I would have been all over Angel of Empire. I'm not so sure he's training great at Churchill Downs.
Okay.
And call the conspiracy theory theorist in me, but he also, Flavian Pratt also rode King's Barnes, right? And so he opted to get off King's Barnes to ride Angel of Empire. Todd Fletcher has waited an inordinate amount of time to name somebody else to ride the Louisiana Derby winner. Now, he had Jose Ortiz potentially lined up. He said Jose would work the horse, but then they'll make a decision. How do you hold out a jockey like Jose Ortiz to see whether or not you're going to go ahead and give him the Derby mount? My spidey senses go up and say, is Flavian Pratt really not going to be available then? Maybe he wants to get back to Flavian Pratt. Brad Cox has worked Angel of Empire at 5:30 in the morning every day at Churchill. Under the lights at 5:30 in the morning, the rest of his horses have come out during the Derby training period at, you know, 8 o'clock and where everybody can watch him. I get this feeling that Angel of Empire isn't going that great. He worked in company with Jace's Road this morning, and it was just okay, 101 and change. I will not be shocked if Angel Empire just isn't 100% right now. And that's what I'm worried about. So, you know, I'm putting a couple things together. Working the horse at 5:30 seems a little strange to me when the rest of your horses are working during the Derby period. And then Pratt is like, oh, well, we don't want to commit to anybody on King's Barnes yet for a week. Who are you waiting for? There's, like, nobody better that's going to come free than Jose Ortiz. And you have him there, and you're going to dangle Jose Ortiz around whether or not he's going to ride or not. I think they're hoping Pratt comes open. So that's my little conspiracy theory for the morning to get your listeners' ears perked up.
Yeah, interesting. Also, you kind of alluded to this a moment ago, and I pulled up a replay of that UAE Derby, and we'll watch Derma Sotagaki getting it done. I thought he looked good over there, and the Japanese runner, very interesting to me. Give us your thoughts on Derma Sotagaki.
Yeah, look, that race was awesome. And I compared the horse visually to Barbaro, and I actually did something where I put the video of that race next to Barbaro in his races, and I just love the way he moves and travels and looks like him. But the video from, like, 2006 is so awful. It's not HD. It's grainy on YouTube. So it wasn't something, like, I published. I just did it for myself to see how they look, because when I watched that horse come down the stretch, it just, like, Barbaro just popped in my mind immediately. And so I was like, okay, am I seeing things or what? So I actually put the video next to each other. I was playing it around on my video editor, and I'm like, okay, I think he does. You know, this is like, this matches up. And so I'm very excited about this horse. Now, since he's got the Churchill Downs, everybody's clamoring about, oh, he spends 2 hours out on the track. It's so much different and whatever. So be it. This is what they do to train their horses in Japan. Now, the workout the other day, where they gave him 5 furlongs and 101 and change, is as much garbage as I've ever seen in a Derby workout. The horse worked 3 furlongs. He did not work 5. And they counted. They said he galloped out an eighth of a mile after the wire. The jockey nudged on him as soon as they crossed the wire, and then eased up, and he's turning around looking for the guy behind him, like three jumps past the wire. How they gave him an extra eighth of a mile in a workout is bizarre. So it looks like he worked terribly slow, five furlongs in like 101 and three. He actually worked three furlongs in like 34 something, you know, when they actually worked him. So if this horse did work three and 34, everybody would be buzzing like, holy crap. Instead, it looks like five and 101 and three, and everybody's like, oh, this Japanese horse is garbage, you know? And so I don't understand it. I have no idea in the world. Where they picked up the work to start was way too early. They hadn't started working yet. And his workmate, who he just completely dusted, Continuar, they gave him a four furlong workout, and they acted like this horse worked five because the jock nudged him past the wire a step. You know, and he ran off once he nudged him. But then he's like turning around. I mean, watch the video. Turn around. He's like looking back over his shoulder, like three jumps past the wire. Like, hey, where'd my workmate go? And they acted like that was another eighth of a mile workout. It's just bizarre to me. If you like the horse, I think that's a good thing. You know, because people like wouldn't jump on his bandwagon off a 101 and change work at Churchill. I think he's got a big time shot. I think he's a top three player. And he's going to be part of the pace of the Derby, and there is very little pace in this year's Derby.
I am really interested to see what he goes off at, because, again, I think after that UAE Derby, I think there was buzz here, but also I think the Japanese money could be a little bit interesting playing with him too. So I'll be interested to see what the value is there.
I agree.
So I like him.
It'll be separate pools in Japan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it'll be separate pools in Japan. They won't – like the nation of Japan will not be betting – but every Japanese-American will have a vested interest in this horse. And I think this is something that goes a little bit underrated Derby Week, is what do the network news networks do? Because they always, like the 6 o'clock news, right, CBS, NBC, ABC, World News Tonight, they always do a Derby segment, all of those channels, every year. If the Japanese angle is what they want to do and tell the nation, then I think there'd be millions of Japanese-Americans that are going to be more excited about the Derby than before. And there could be a ton of money played in the wind pool on this horse from that kind of coverage. You know, is this the Good Morning America angle? Is this, you know, there's always one of those in every year, every Derby. Which do those, you know, novice covering horse racing type shows, what do they feature and what does America see? And I think the Japanese angle could very, very well be of interest to them. And if that's the case, that will hurt him in the wind pool. I think he potentially could be the second favorite. And if Forte goes off like 4-1 or 9-2 and drifts way up, you could see Dermasoda Gaki like at 6-1 second choice. I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, I am very interested, very intrigued. Also, I wanted to get thoughts on a race that has a few horses coming in the Bluegrass April 8th. We're going to watch number one Tappet Trice get it done. I know there's a lot of buzz on Tappet Trice. He has looked very good for Todd Pletcher, verifying the three runs second. Blazing Sevens will run third, but Blazing Sevens was declared from the Derby a few days ago. We'll head to the Preakness. But running fourth, Sun Thunder, I was in here doing the handicapping show when he broke the maiden, and I said, you know what, I think Ken McPeak has a nice horse. So I've kind of been enamored with Sun Thunder since then. But off the fourth place finish, I'm not sure. Underneath maybe in the Derby. But again, your thoughts out of this Bluegrass on Tappet Trice and verifying who's just a neck back.
It looked a lot to me like the Wood Memorial last year. Remember when early voting looked like he was gone and Mo Donegal just kept coming and coming and coming and got him? And they did it in a good time, and there were two quality horses that you expected to run their race, and they did, and everybody else was far behind them. That turned out to be a pretty live race, right? The early voting won the Preakness. Mo Donegal won the Belmont. And with a better trip, Mo Donegal would have been better than sixth in the Derby, you know, from the rail. So I think that race is pretty live. It reminds me a lot of last year's Wood Memorial. And I think those are two quality horses in verifying and Tappet Trice. The one thing about Tappet Trice is, to me, it's really, really dependent on where he draws. He's not a great gate horse, obviously. He got better in the Bluegrass, but he's also a big, loping, long striding horse, and he's got to be outside. If he gets buried down inside, I think that's going to be a tough trip for him. So he's going to give ground probably on the turns of the Derby, and he's going to have to be good enough to overcome that over the mile and a quarter. But I think they want to keep him outside. You do not want that horse bottled up and and try to kind of be a little pocket rocket moving in and out of traffic. You know, that rich strike move we saw last year where, like, it was like a computer joystick, you know, where he was kind of, like, zigging in and out of horses and stuff. I don't think Davin Trice has that ability. I think he's a better horse by a mile than Rich Strike, but I don't think he has that ability to kind of zig and zag. I think he's kind of got to just get grinded and going. And so you want to keep him outside. So that's the horse I think you definitely want to watch the post-draw for. As for Verifying, I don't think he can get – I thought the mile and an eighth with that pace scenario at Keeneland was his best chance. I don't think he can get a mile and a quarter, and I don't think he's fast enough to get the lead. He'll probably be chasing, like, third. And no lead, no pass is a tough way to win a horse race. And so I don't like Verifying for the Derby per se, but I thought that was a really good effort over the track at Keeneland. I think Davin Trice has a shot, but he has got to get a good draw. He's got to get no traffic in his way. He's the Belmont horse, though, I'll tell you that right now. He is the Belmont horse. He's by Tappet. We know what the Tappets do at Belmont. And just to get to open up with those long legs on that turn, if you could give me a future bet on the Belmont right now, I'd take Davin Trice as the favorite.
Yeah, I have no disagreements there. One more race I wanted to take a look at because I really like your opinion. Santa Anita Derby. We'll watch number 5, Practical Joke. Nice, gutsy win over the aforementioned Mandarin Hero, the Japanese Invader. I was on the radio with Steve Bick a couple weeks ago, and he poo-pawed me. And earlier on the handicapping show, I mentioned that my co-host, Anthony Marmino, also disagreed. I said, you know what, with a couple triple-digit buyers and the buyers going backwards for Forte, I wouldn't be surprised to see Practical Joke become the favorite, Practical Move become the favorite in the Derby, because bettors these days focus so much on the buyer figures. He comes in now with 2 triple-digit buyers. Now, Bick and my co-host earlier both, you know, and it's probably the fact that Pletcher and Rapoli and those connections are a little more prominent than Tim Yachtin and probably will take more of the money. But again, with 2 triple-digit buyers coming in, Practical Move to me becomes very interesting next Saturday.
Yeah, I agree. The whole question with him is the distance. We know he's a really, really good mile and a 16th horse, a very good mile and a 16th horse. At the mile and an eighth in the San Anita Derby, he was good, but he wasn't as good as the San Felipe. But that's not to say that that doesn't happen a lot in history. The San Felipe is one of those races that almost always produces a ridiculously fantastic performance for whatever reason. The time of the year, the mile and a 16th at Santa Anita, you go back to horses like Premier Pegasus and Danzig Candy and stuff. These horses like ran off the screen and ran fabulous in the San Felipe and then stepped back and didn't run nearly as well in the Santa Anita Derby. To his credit, Practical Move did not run as good in the Santa Anita Derby visually as he did in the mile and a 16th race in the San Felipe, but he still won. You know, so you got to give credit where it's due. And it's not often horses win those 2 races. That's why I say there's usually a brilliant performance in the San Felipe and then a step back in the Santa Anita Derby. It's been a while since somebody's won both those races. You got to go back to California Chrome. Other horses who have done it have been like Pioneer of the Nile, Dortmund. These horses all hit the board in the Kentucky Derby. We're 1, 2, 3 finishers in the Derby. It doesn't happen very often. And when it does happen that a horse can win both those races, they're usually a big factor. So I think Practical Move is a top 4 superfecta kind of horse for sure in the Kentucky Derby. He's kind of like, for me, he's right there at like number 4, number 5, depending on how cute you want to get with prices and stuff like that. Because, like, if you take him, you like Domer Sotogaki, you like Forte, next thing you know, you got 3 horses at like 6-1 or less, 8-1 or less, and you're trying the Derby, and that just feels like that's wrong, you know? That just feels wrong to have 3 6-1 shots in your. So do you push him down and try to get somebody else up under the mix? Skinner, I really like Skinner's race in the Santa Anita Derby because I thought he moved too soon under Victor. Jeff Siegel and I in a podcast we do immediately after the Santa Anita Derby, we're both saying, God bless Victor. He's had a great career, but he's not a good fit for this horse coming from off the pace. He's just not a closing jockey. And we both said, boy, we'd love to see a jockey change here, but you're not going to take off a multiple Kentucky Derby winner like Victor Espinosa if you get in the field. Well, turns out they did, so I don't know whether or not they were listening to us. I know they weren't. I'm joking at that. But they went ahead and changed to Juan Hernandez, and I think that's going to be a good move for Skinner. So, like, if you're saying, okay, I like Practical moves, Skinner was right there with him. I think the mile and a quarter definitely fits Skinner. It doesn't necessarily fit Practical Move, who the mile and an eighth might be about as far as he wants to go with that Practical Joke pedigree. maybe Skinner is the horse that you want out of the Santa Anita Derby. And if you're trying to get somebody in your Trier Super who's not 6-1, 8-1, he's going to be 20-30-1. And so that's, you know, in my top four, I'm probably going to end up with Skinner in there over some of these other horses, just because I got to get a price in there somewhere. And he's the best of the prices I like.
Yeah, interesting. You answered my next question, because I was going to wrap it up and say, do you have anything that's maybe sneaky? And Skinner may fit that. For me, I think this arm is maybe a little bit interesting and may offer some value. Just snuck in with that win in the Lexington, or that third place finish in the Lexington. Just got enough points to sneak in. But the reports on the workouts, I thought, have been okay. I thought this arm may be a little bit interesting at a price as well.
Yeah, the other thing about this arm that I like, because I'm always trying to read between the lines and hear things. When Asmussen won that stakes race last week with Red Route 1 at Oakland that had the automatic qualifier for the Preakness, they said, are you going to the Preakness? He said, well, let's see what Disarm does in the Derby first, right? So he doesn't want to run against, if Disarm wins the Derby, he doesn't want to run against his own horse running in the Preakness, right? The fact that he's even thinking Disarm might win the Derby is a surprise to a lot of people after seeing him run third in the Lexington. I get the feeling that the Lexington stakes, not six, I don't think they weren't not trying to win, but I think they knew they just needed to run third, and they did all they could do just to do that and not empty the horse for the Derby. So it's kind of like I follow quarter horse racing a lot from my days in Oklahoma. In trials, like, if there's only two trials to get into the final, the horses don't run that hard in the trials. If there's 15 trials to get into the finals, you know you have to run your best and run fast to get one of the fastest times to get in. So I think they were treating that like all we have to do is show up and get third and we're into the Derby, so let's not empty the horse in the quote-unquote trial. Maybe Disarm is more alive than that Lexington would suggest. Certainly after the Louisiana Derby, a lot of people were high on him.
Yeah, and I agree completely. I thought that was very interesting. The win and you're in last week at Oakland, he said, yeah, let's see what our Derby horse does. That was it's kind of telling. Yeah. Jeremy, before I let you go, I'll just tout folks again, Countdown to the Crown. And I also tip my cap to you, because as I'm looking at yesterday's edition, you have the Countdown to the Crown season selections. You make picks every week on some of the Derby prep stakes races and whatnot. 41%. I'm giving you applause here. Nice job this season with the selections. And I'm assuming next Friday we'll have a Kentucky Derby Countdown to the Crown coming out, correct?
Yeah, all 20 horses. Plus, I'm going to use the AEs. Last year I screwed up and didn't include the AEs in my individual rundown. So I didn't even mention Rich Strike in the I learned my lesson. Whoever is the AEs, they're getting included. So maybe 23 horses will be previewed next week for Countdown. But Seth, thank you for the applause. I wish I could have had half that success at Keeneland in this meet. I was terrible at Keeneland. So if somebody followed my Keeneland picks and said, how in the world did this guy pick 41%? Apples and oranges, I guess. Keeneland was not kind, too.
That was a tough nut to crack, because I was doing Keeneland every day, too. And it was... there was some, if you were right, you got paid, but there were some races that, unless you liked Wesley Ward in the 2-year-old sprints, then you were all right, certainly. But, Jeremy, always appreciate the conversation. Had a lot of fun, and, wishing you good luck over the next week. And, we will probably check in again as the crown progresses, but, appreciate the thoughts this morning. And again, good luck going forward into next Saturday.
Thanks. It's always nice to join you, and, good luck to your listeners there today and in the Derby.
Appreciate it. Jeremy Plonk, again, Countdown to the Crown, horseplayernow.com, and highly recommended to pull up the fun Countdown to the Crown historical comparison edition. It's very fun picking out horses who have, over the past Triple Crown seasons, run similarly to some of this year's performers. So check that out online. Otherwise, I'm going to wrap things up. We'll be back in, you know, about an hour and a half or so with OTB Live for Saturday afternoon. Going to look at some Aqueduct, some Oaklawn, and then I pulled in some Tampa as well, because, of course, Churchill is an evening card, but we will have the Thoroughbreds available tonight to watch here on the network and to wager as well at CapitalOTBBet.com, so keep that in mind. Also want to remind you that next Wednesday will be the annual Capital OTB Kentucky Derby Seminar. You can watch it here on the network, or you can pull it up on our YouTube channel, some of the other OTB social media platforms. I'll be in the studio with Anthony Marmino and the Brooklyn Cowboy, Kevin Cox. We'll take a comprehensive look at the Kentucky Derby. That's next Wednesday at 7 o'clock. Don't forget, we have a couple other nice promos. The Kentucky Derby Bankroll. Kevin Cox is going to have $2,500 to play on behalf of the Bankroll team. Part of the team is made up of some of the top account wagers during the month of April. Some are from new accounts, but there is also an online component, and you can put your name in the hat to potentially get selected on the team. The entries opened yesterday and will go until Wednesday, so go put your name in at capitalotb.com. Click on the promotions link, then look for the Kentucky Derby Bankroll graphic, and you'll see the entry form there. One entry per person, but you get a chance to get on the big Bankroll team for Derby Day. And again, the Derby Day card and the payoffs being what they are, there's the opportunity to have the Bankroll knock it out of the park and give you some nice free dough. Speaking of which, knocking it out of the park on Derby Day, the Syndicate. There will be a Derby Syndicate. And if you're not familiar with the Syndicate concept, we do it on Saratoga days and some other big days. You put in some money, and then Capital OTB puts some money. In the Derby Syndicate, it's going to be 20 players, each putting in $100. So that's $2,000. OTB then puts in $1,000 for $3,000 to be wagered Kentucky Derby Day. And you, if you're on the team, enter your picks. And the team's picks are figured out, a consensus is come up with, and then the wager is made for the Kentucky Derby Syndicate. Always a lot of fun, and again, Derby Day being what it is, there is the potential to knock it out of the park. The Syndicate is a first-come, first-serve situation, and Syndicate signups will open tomorrow at the website at noontime, Sunday at noontime. That's when things open up for the Derby Day Syndicate. And again, it will be first come, first serve for 20 folks. So keep that in mind as well. Otherwise, fun morning here. Opening day at Churchill tonight. And we were joined by Joe Christofek and some great Derby conversation with Jeremy Plonk. Hopefully, we gave you some good ideas for today at Churchill and next weekend as well. And we will continue to do so over the next week here on the network, starting with OTB Live a little bit later this afternoon. We'll be looking at today's races, but maybe have some conversation on the Derby throughout the afternoon also. So you can tune in again, about an hour and a half or so, just looking post time at Aqueduct is going to be 1:20. Oakland, 1:30, and Tampa today will kick off at 12:18. So I'm imagining that'll probably overlap with the NYRA pregame show, so we'll probably kick off a little later than that, our usual lunchtime time for OTB Live on a Saturday afternoon. So I appreciate you tuning in this morning, as always. Seth Merrow in the studio. Thanks for watching. Again, back in the afternoon, just about lunchtime for OTB Live for a Saturday afternoon. We'll see you then.
We would like to thank Woodbine for their sponsorship of this program and some of the other programming and events here at Capital OTB. Woodbine's 2023 Thoroughbred Stakes program has more than $17 million in purses, including 39 graded stakes, 5 grade 1 events, and 2 $1 million classics, the King's Plate and the Woodbine Mile. Woodbine, now through December, great racing north of the border.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.